This is the Hasidic Story Project with Barak Holman, podcasting from Jerusalem, Israel. This podcast is sponsored by listeners just like you. To become a supporter of this podcast, please go to HasidicStory.com. HASIDIC Story.com.
You'll never know. You'll never know. Shalom Aleichem, my sweetest friends. Is it even possible to say that we're after Purim? Does Purim actually ever end? For me, it doesn't. I just go from one Purim to the next. And so, now that Purim is, in quotes, over, it's time to prepare for Purim for next year. And in order to do that, we're going to have to hear Hasidic stories for an entire year to prepare for Purim. And so this week, I have two stories for you, my sweetest friends. But before we begin, I want to dedicate this episode, Be'ezat Hashem, to the continued success of our soldiers in battle, wherever they are, to the returning of all the hostages, whole, healthy, and complete, the refuah shlema of everybody who's been injured, and the comforting of those who lost loved ones, and God willing, the continued unity of the Jewish people here in the land of Israel and all around the world. It was the late 1960s here in the holy city of Jerusalem. And if you've ever been here, you can see how the city shuts down as it gets ready for the Holy Shabbos. These days, we have a siren that goes off that announces that Shabbos has begun. Really, in Jerusalem, it's 40 minutes before Shabbos. But in those days, there were people that passed messages, the town crier or announcers. And as everybody was getting ready for Shabbos, trying to finish cooking, men running to the mikveh just before Shabbos was about to begin, all around town, the town criers were shouting out and announcing, not the death of somebody, chas v'shalom, God forbid, which is usually what they do, but announcing that there's an important message from the Beit Din, the rabbinical court, the Eruv, which is a halachic requirement for carrying outside of one's personal domain, their home, their courtyard. The Eruv in Jerusalem is pasul, it's faulty, it's not kosher, and therefore no one is allowed to carry on Shabbos. Now, it wasn't long before Shabbos was about to begin. People had been going around and checking the Eruv to make sure that everything was fine. And when there was a defect found, there was no time before Shabbos to fix it and to check the rest of the Eruv to make sure that nothing else was damaged. So anybody who was planning on giving a kiddush that Shabbos quickly had to bring all the food to the shul. Grandparents called on their grandchildren to bring their reading glasses to shul and their talises. Everyone made sure to check their pockets to make sure they didn't have any mukzeh, anything that was forbidden to use on Shabbos. Whether it was a handkerchief, or a box of tabak, or even a bobby pin, it all had to be left at home. You weren't allowed to carry it. And the parents were trying to explain to their younger children that they wouldn't be able to pick them up if they walked out in the street. The children really didn't understand what the big fuss was. And at the time, there was a rabbi from New York visiting a friend here in the Holy City. And when he heard that there was no Eruv, it wasn't such a big deal for him because back in New York where he lived, there also wasn't an Eruv, and he didn't carry anything anyhow on Shabbos. And many of the Jewish communities outside of Israel don't have Eruvim, either for halachic reasons or technical reasons, and so it wasn't a big deal for him. And this visiting rabbi from New York, he asked his friend, "Where do you think I should go after Shabbos begins?" And he said, first you should go into the center of town and watch how the city shuts down just as the sun is setting. And then, after davening tonight, we really should go to the Tish, the Hasidic gathering at the table of the Beis Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael Alter, who was the fifth Admor, or Rebbe, of the Gera dynasty of Hasidim. And the friend said to the visiting rabbi, "I guarantee you, if we go to the Tish of the Gera Rebbe, it'll make an impression on you that you'll never forget." Now, this visiting rabbi from New York had actually grown up in a Hasidic home, but being in America, it changed his way of dressing. He still wore a kippah, of course, and tzitziot, and kept a life of Torah and mitzvot, but he didn't wear the Hasidic garb anymore, and he shaved his beard, which, of course, Hasidim don't do, myself included. And so they decided on Friday night they were going to finish the meal quickly, and that would give them time to reach the Gera Beit Midrash in Geula, which is right next to Me'er Sharim, and maybe even be able to find a place right next to the Rebbe to sit down. So after they lit candles on Friday night, they went to shul, daven Kabbalat Shabbat, the Friday night davening, and then they came back home and ate a quick meal. And the host apologized to his family. He said, "You know, we have a visitor here from New York, and I promised to bring him to the Gera Rebbe, to his Tish. So I'm sorry, my sweetest family, we're going to have to run out. We don't have time to give Divrei Torah, words of Torah, or sing Smirot, the Shabbos songs. And so they quickly benched, they said the prayer for after eating bread, and they started heading to Geula. Very excited for the experience that they were going to have at the Rebbe's Tish. And when they finally reached the street, they were surprised to see that the Beit Midrash was already packed with people. Even though it was enormous, it was hard for them to make their way inside. But they slowly pushed through the crowd, trying to get as close as possible to the Rebbe. And their fantasy of having a place to sit, they realized, was not realistic. Even standing wasn't so easy because every now and then, more and more people would try to come in, and the crowd would shift from one side of the hall to the other. And they saw there were young boys and young men excitedly waiting for the Rebbe to come in, but they were willing to suffer a little bit of discomfort because they wanted to have the special experience of being at the Tish of the Rebbe. And the moment the Rebbe entered the room, everyone became silent, and it was the Ger Rebbe's custom to scan the room to see who was there. And we looked people in the eye, giving them a penetrating look. And then after a short amount of time, he would focus his eyes on a certain spot and start walking in that direction. And people would move aside to make room for the Rebbe to pass through. And sometimes the Rebbe would go over to somebody and say a comment to the person before the Tish began. And that Friday night, the Rebbe walks into the room. He looks around the room and he sees where the two guests are standing. The visitor from New York and his friend who brought him to the Tish. The Rebbe focuses his eyes on the rabbi from New York, and the crowd parts, and he starts making his way over to the rabbi. As everybody started moving aside and making a path for the Rebbe stood right in front of the visiting rabbi from New York, and he says to him directly, "It's true, my friend, that there's no Eruv, and you're not allowed to carry. But even if there's no Eruv, a Jew is allowed to carry a beard." And in Yiddish, the word for carrying is also used for wearing a beard. And then the Rebbe turned around and continued going to his place. But this Jew visiting from New York stood there in shock. He was actually shaking after the Rebbe spoke with him. The Rebbe didn't know him, and the Rebbe didn't know anything about him. For all the Rebbe knew, this was the first time he'd ever been to a Tish. Maybe he was a secular Jew. But apparently the Rebbe knew that this visiting rabbi grew up in a Hasidic home and once had a beard and once wore the Hasidic garb. And the Rebbe's words pierced the visiting rabbi's heart, and he accepted the rebuke of the Rebbe with love. He didn't take offense. He didn't say to himself, "Who is this Rebbe to tell me how I can be a Jew?" The Rebbe rebuked him, and he took it to heart, and eventually went back to America. And he did think every now and then about growing a beard and going back to his old way of dressing. But it's a hard thing to do sometimes, especially when you're surrounded by non-Jews who could care less about how you dress and if you carry a beard or you don't. And 7 years passed. During those 7 years, he didn't grow a beard and he didn't change his clothes. And he continued the same lifestyle that he had inside and out. And he felt a longing to return to Jerusalem. And when he got back here, he really wanted the experience of the Ger Rebbe's Tish once again. And so he finished his Shabbos meal and quickly ran over to the hall of the Beit Midrash to find himself a place to stand and see the Rebbe. And like the last time, everyone was waiting in anticipation for the Rebbe to come. And the crowd is shoving from one side to the other. And this Jew merited to get a few shoves from the crowd here and there. But the second that the Rebbe entered the room, everyone was quiet, and the pushing stopped. And the Rebbe looks around, and he sees the clean-shaven Jew. And he starts walking towards him, and a path opens up instantly to where this Jew was standing. Within a few seconds, the Rebbe is standing in front of him. And he looks the clean-shaven Jew in the eye, and he says, "My sweetest friend, did I hurt your feelings?" Now, 7 years had gone by. Thousands of Jews, maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of people, had come to see the Rebbe. But the second the Rebbe saw the clean-shaven Jew from New York, what was he worried about? He was worried that he might have offended him, that he might have caused him pain. This time the Rebbe didn't turn around. He stayed there, standing in front of this Jew, waiting to make sure that the man wasn't embarrassed or insulted, and that he was able to accept the Rebbe's rebuke with love and an open heart. And once the Rebbe saw that the clean-shaven Jew had accepted the rebuke and wasn't embarrassed, the Rebbe turned around and went to lead the Tish. And if the clean-shaven Jew was shaking the first time the Rebbe spoke with him 7 years before, He was shaking even more now, and it didn't take him long for him to begin to grow a beard and to go back to wearing the Hasidic garb that he had worn when he was growing up and as a young man. And as a result of the Rebbe's rebuke, this Jew continued dressing as a Hasid on the outside and acting as a Hasid on the inside, and he kept a full beard until the end of his days. You know, my sweetest friend, it's not easy to rebuke your fellow Jew. A lot of people are not willing to hear it from somebody else. You can, of course, rebuke yourself. But if you're going to rebuke your fellow Jew, make sure you do it from the sweetest, most sincere place. And as the Friedeker Rebbe says in Ayom Yom, make sure, before you point your finger, you trim your own nails first.
Hi, good Shabbos, good Shabbos. Good Shabbos.
I have another story for you. Reb Naftali of Rapshitz, who was the Rapshitzer Rebbe, was one of the great tzaddikim. And of course, everybody knows that the holy Rapshitzer was the right-hand man of the seer of Lublin. Every morning when he would return home from davening, he would put down his talis and tefillin and immediately start going door to door, collecting tzedakah, money for poor Jews. And only after he collected the money and distributed it to the poor Jews would he sit down and eat something in the morning. And it wasn't easy, because every day the Rapshitzer showed up asking the same people for money. The rich didn't want to part with their money, and the poor didn't have much to part with. But still, every day he went around collecting tzedakah for poor Jews. And one day the Rapshitzer finishes his rounds. He handed out all of the tzedakah money, and he was finally about to sit down and wash and eat something, the first food of the day. And he hears a knock at the door. He goes and opens the door and he sees it's a poor man. And the Rapshitzer says to him, I'm really sorry, my friend. I already did my rounds. I collected from everyone in town and I've already distributed all the money. I promise you come tomorrow morning. As soon as I collect tzedakah, I'll give to you. And the man just stood there, staring silently at the Rebbe. The Rebbe explains to him, listen, I have a lot of Torah commitments today. I have a very full schedule. I don't have time to go around and collect tzedakah for you. And I've handed out all the money. So the poor man just stood there, staring at the Rebbe, and the Rebbe realized, okay, I have to go and collect money for this Jew. So the Rebbe gets up, before even eating, and he knocks on the first door, and the person who answers the door says, Rebbe, you came already. You come every day. I already gave to you. I'm not giving you anymore. The Rebbe said, I know. I'm really sorry. A poor person came to me after I distributed all the money, and I'm collecting for him. So the guy gives him a small coin. Not the amount that he usually gives. And he goes to the next house, and some people don't want to give. And one person says to the Rebbe, Rebbe, do you actually learn any Torah? Or you just walk around all day collecting money for people? And the next person says to the Rebbe, excuse me, Rebbe, but you don't remember you were here just like half an hour ago, and I already gave you money? And the one after that says, Rebbe, tell me, are you just coming to my house twice? Or are you going to other people as well? And so people gave, but they only gave a small amount. It took the Rebbe a long time to collect a small amount of money, and he finally returns back to the house. In the meantime, the Rebbetzin had fed the poor man the food that the Rebbe was planning on eating himself. And he comes, and the poor man gets up from the table, and he says, oh, Rebbe, thank you so much. Thank you for the meal. And the Rebbe hands him the few coins that he collected. The poor man is very happy. The Rebbe sits down and eats the leftovers that the poor man had left for him. And just as he's starting the meal, there's another knock on the door. And the Rebbe thinks to himself, what's going on here? So he gets up and he opens the door. And the man standing there says, I know, Rebbe, I'm really sorry. It's really late. And I know you're busy. And I don't want to bother you. I'll come back tomorrow. And the Rebbe says, what do you need? He said, well, Rebbe, really, I need to just release a burden from my chest. Do you have a few minutes just to listen to me, Rebbe? I won't take long, I promise. And so Reb Naftali, he says, okay, come on in. Tell me what you need to say. And the poor man says, my wife, she's not healthy. The doctors say, God forbid, her life might be in danger. And my daughter, she's getting older. And I still don't have any money for her wedding. And on top of that, Rebbe, My whole house collapsed yesterday. The support beams broke, and now I just have a pile of wood. What a mess. But you know, Rebbe, it feels so good to release that burden and share it with you. So the Rapshitzer Rebbe understood, and he puts down his food. He tells the man, come, you want something to eat? The man says, yeah, Rebbe, thank you. I'm actually quite hungry. The Rebbe puts on his coat and once again starts walking around town collecting tzedakah. But this time, it was completely different than the last time. When he goes to the first house, and remember, this is the third time that day, instead of getting angry at the Rapshitzer, the man says, Shalom Aleichem, Rebbe. Where have you been? Did you come to collect some more tzedakah? You know, I'm so sorry I wasn't nice to you last time. I mean, if you're coming three times in a day, Rebbe, you have to mamash be like the greatest tzaddik there ever was. I want to thank you for coming to me and asking me for tzedakah again and giving me the opportunity to give you even more. Rebbe, instead of giving you the half ruble that I gave you last time, here's 10 rubles, Rebbe. And so it was, house after house. Every time Rebbe Naftali showed up at somebody's house, instead of getting angry at him, they were happy to see him. And the Rapshitzer didn't understand what was going on in the beginning, but by the time he got back with all of this money, he says to the poor Jew that was finishing eating up all of his food, here you go, my friend. I collected a lot of money for you. And it's yours. I'm not going to take it back. But I want you to tell me the truth. When you came here to share your burdens with me and tell me about your wife and your daughter and your house, you weren't telling me the truth, were you? I don't think your wife is sick. And I don't think your daughter is getting older and you need money for the wedding. And I don't think your house collapsed either. Am I right? And the poor man was embarrassed. And he said, well, Rebbe, well, I wasn't exactly lying. Maybe I was exaggerating a little bit, but for sure I wasn't lying. My wife is pregnant. And it says in our holy books that when a woman gives birth, her life is in danger. And you can even break Shabbos for her. The Rebbe says, and what about your daughter's wedding? He said, well, you know, she's only 5 years old. But should I wait for the last minute to collect money for my daughter's wedding? I mean, it might be another 10 years before she's married. But there's no time like the present, right, Rebbe? The Rebbe says, and what about your house? He said, well, it's not the entire house that collapsed, really. I found a rocking chair in the garbage, and I sat on it. And it collapsed when I sat on it. And I felt like my whole life was collapsing on me when the chair broke. But now the poor man looked at the Rebbe and he said, Rebbe, how is it that you know all this? And if you knew all this, why did you go around collecting money for me? And the Rapshitzer says, every time I go and collect money, it's always so hard because there's always some obstacle to the holiness. The second time when I went today, people were really angry at me and they didn't give me very much. But this time, people welcomed me with open arms. Instead of giving a ruble, they gave 10 or 20. I never experienced anything like this. There were no obstacles to the holiness. And then I realized something is wrong here. It's true that I'm collecting tzedakah, but I must be collecting for somebody who's truly not worthy of it. And therefore, I'm not actually doing the mitzvah of collecting tzedakah for poor people. And with that, the poor man took the money. And he was so embarrassed after what he had done to the Rapshitzer Rebbe that he decided that he was now going to go around and collect money for other poor people. And he experienced the same thing that the Rebbe did. When he would go around, people would get angry at him. And if he went around twice, they really got angry at him. But if ever there was a time when he collected money and there was not only no resistance, but people were nice to him, he knew that the person that he was collecting for was not truly in need of the tzedakah. And so, my friends, when you encounter resistance in trying to do mitzvot, in trying to fix your ways, come closer to Hashem, to serve Hashem with joy, to pay for things like matzah for Pesach, or give tzedakah, when you encounter resistance, you should know that the resistance is because you're doing something holy. And don't give up, my friends. Keep pushing forward. Keep on keeping Shabbos. And keep on keeping kosher. And keep on wearing tzitzit. And lighting candles for Shabbos. And whatever it is you do. And if you encounter resistance, take it as a good sign. And let it make you stronger in your Torah and mitzvot. Thank you so much for listening, my sweetest friends. I want to thank all of the kind people that sent in contributions and all of the people that have monthly and yearly contributions. It's greatly appreciated. And thank you to all the listeners and the people that sent me messages and emails and left messages on the YouTube videos. I read them all and I'm so grateful for them all. Thank you for your support and for listening. And I hope the preparations for Pesach go well and you have a beautiful rest of Adar. Don't forget, Misha Nichnas Adar Mawi Mesimcha. When the month of Adar comes in, we increase with our joy, and it doesn't end until we get to the month of Av, and then we're Mematim, slightly bring down the level of joy. But God forbid we don't get sad or depressed. We're just a little less joyous. But then as soon as Av is over, we're heading to Adar. So we have to start being joyous again. Be'ezrat Hashem, everyone in good health. And as a blessed people on Purim, in English we say, you should be healthy, wealthy, and wise. And in Hebrew I was saying, Shelecha Shirut, Briyut, V'chochma, Be'ezrat Hashem, B'simcha. Always with joy, my sweetest friends. Zay Gesund.